Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at residential solar energy on the show today. You know, last year's solar installation tripled, and we're going to learn some more about that from our guest today, Sam Donaisky. He is the Distributed Resource Director for Renew Wisconsin. And as we talk with Sam, I hope you'll join in with your questions. What do you have to know, or what would you like to know about adding solar maybe to your home or maybe your business? What would you like to know about the advantages of using solar? Maybe you've already installed it. What kinds of experiences have you had? Join in. Give a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Sam Donaisky, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry, thanks for having me on the show again.
Let's talk about, tell us about Renew Wisconsin.
Yeah, Renew Wisconsin is a renewable energy advocacy organization at our heart. We do work on renewable energy policy programs and just sort of general education and outreach across the state of Wisconsin. So we work on a lot of solar, a lot of wind recently too, but we also do work in geothermal, in local hydroelectric power, in biogas and biofuels, and now recently a little bit more in electric vehicles as well, and some of the batteries and some of the other components that not only go into electric vehicles, but that also kind of help sustain our grid in general. So we do a lot of work across the state on various types of clean renewable energy.
Yeah, that's really cool. Are there some specific solar programs that you're working on right now?
Yeah, so I manage two programs that cover various types and regions across the state. I manage a program here in the city of Madison called Madison, S-U-N, and we have a residential program, we have a business program, and we also have a program for nonprofits and affordable housing providers as well to help them go solar. And then the other program that I run is called Solar for Good. It's a statewide program, similar to the nonprofit program that the city of Madison runs, although Solar for Good is actually a little bit older. We help nonprofits, churches, humane societies, veteran shelters, things like that, with some of the upfront costs of going solar. We provide monetary grants as well as solar panels as well to help them kind of get over the hump of that. And we also provide, you know, education and other outreach to make the solar process a little bit easier for those folks.
So why have solar installations increased by so much this past year?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, we've seen movement on the solar front in many different areas. You know, we've certainly seen a lot being done by the utilities. We've also, last year, as you hinted at, we've seen a lot on the residential side as well. Over the last 18 months, a lot more of us have been staying at home. We've been using more energy. We've been more conscious about how we use our energy. And because of that, as you said, yeah, we saw nearly a tripling of residential solar installation last year across the state. And a lot of that is because the prices have come down so much. In the last decade, residential solar costs have gone down between 70 and 75%. Utility scale costs have gone down close to 90%. So the economics of this is really what's driving this push for solar. Solar is also really great because it's really scalable. You know, you can do an installation on your home. I've even seen some installations, or I don't even know if I can call it an installation, but I've seen solar panels outfitted to RVs and campers. And then you can also do these really large solar farms as well that can provide power for hundreds or even thousands of homes and businesses. So the price decline is really what's driving solar right now.
And I think there have been advances in solar panels over time. Maybe talk about some of the advances we've seen in solar panels.
Yeah, absolutely. My coworker just upgraded his solar array. He brought in one of his old solar panels from his old array. That panel, I believe, was 180 watts, so it provided 180 watts of power. Now, the solar panels we're seeing, just for residential, not even getting into larger, you know, commercial or utility scale, But the solar panels we're seeing now are 370 to 400 watts each. So we've seen almost a doubling in the efficiency of those panels. And not only have we seen that, but the aesthetics are getting better. If you've seen an old solar array, it might kind of look like, you know, elephant ears. It's kind of propped up in a weird way. Now the panels are almost always flush mounted to your roof. They can be all black as well, so you can even barely tell they're there in many cases. So just, you know, strides on so many different fronts, economic, technology, and aesthetics. That's really what's driving this push for solar right now.
And you think this is even going to improve down the road? Are there changes coming that you think might?
Always changes coming. What that exactly looks like is anyone's guess. I mean, you know, a lot of the prognosticators just 10 years ago honestly did not believe the prices would fall as precipitously as they did. You know, we certainly expected a decline, but not quite at the rate that we've seen. So I certainly expect the panels to become more efficient. We're probably going to be able to put them in more places. I know of a company out of Eau Claire that's actually doing sort of artistic solar installations. It's not just a panel. They're incorporating it into other infrastructure and other walks of life. So we're seeing improvements going off in all sorts of different directions. And it just kind of depends on if you're interested in the bottom line, if you're interested in efficiency, or if you're interested in the look and how it actually operates.
Mm-hmm. Sam Donaisky, our guest today from Renew Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions talking solar with him. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Stick a call. Larry in Kingston, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering, how big of a system would you have to have, solar system, to be able to charge your electric vehicle?
Okay. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, that's a good question. If we're talking about just powering your electric vehicle, you maybe only need two or three panels. If you're talking about incorporating that into a home installation, it would just be a matter of tacking on a few more panels as well. Of course, it's going to depend on many things. It's going to depend on, you know, are you getting a full electric vehicle, you know, like a Tesla, or are you getting an EV, a plug-in hybrid, you know, that maybe has a shorter range just for trips around the city and things like that. But yeah, essentially, you're only going to need a couple more panels. The good thing now is you can incorporate that into a home solar array very easily. So if you were to do an installation, say, just for your electric vehicle, that would cost more individually than if you did one for your home and your car at the same time. There's also some great inverters right now that will take that solar electricity and run it directly into your car, so you don't lose any electrons in the DC to AC process. So another example of really where technology is just pushing forward at an incredible pace.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate your call. Kate in Madison emailed. Now, she and her husband are getting solar panels installed today, as a matter of fact. They have one full electric car and one plug-in hybrid. They use a lot of grow lights indoors, so they are really excited about all this. However, if the recent economy had not made their new EV cheaper than a used car, they would have been able to get it. And they used a cash out refinance to pay for the solar panels. So all of these environmental measures that they were able to achieve were either because of a fluke in the economy or a large long-term expense rather than having more of their mortgage paid. She's very grateful, but clearly she feels it needs to be easier for people.
Yeah, and that's, you know, part of what I do is I try to make it easier either by setting folks up, you know, with the people that do those installations or just educating them on how they can change and how they can upgrade things. You know, first of all, Kate, thank you so much for going solar. Thank you even more for doing an electric vehicle, or it sounds like almost two electric vehicles, essentially. But Kate makes a great point here in that, you know, when you do solar and you do an electric vehicle at the same time, you're not only supplying electricity for your home, you're supplying fuel for your vehicle. So you're going to pay off that solar array, or you're going to decrease that return on investment time even more so. And not only that, with an EV, you typically have less maintenance costs. You don't have to go in for oil changes all the time. You don't have to do a lot of that other upkeep that a typical internal combustion engine would have to do. Now, those EVs still do cost more. Thankfully, there are still some tax credits available, both for EVs and for solar arrays. So that's really helping bring the cost down and making this affordable for just about everyone.
Jim in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, so I want to get solars on my roof, but I don't know if I should get these companies come by and they say, oh, we'll put them in for free, and then you guys just give us the electric you get back. And I'm wondering I don't really like that, because then I can't like decide what kind of panels that I'm going to put on and what they're going to look like and if I get the best. So I was just actually curious if you knew if it's better to do this free thing, but you got to pay for it over time, or you just put them on yourself. And can you put them on yourself? Is it that difficult?
Okay, good questions, Jim. Thanks for that, for those questions. Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, so there's it doesn't seem like it, but there's a lot to unpack in that question. So what I would say is, whenever someone offers you something for free, that sounds suspicious, right? That sounds too good to be true, as the old saying goes. And if it's too good to be true, it probably is. So we always encourage folks, you know, whether you're seeking out solar on your own, whether someone comes and knocks on your door about solar, go out and get several quotes. We do this actually even within our own group buy here in Madison. I don't even know any other group buys that do this, but we provide 3 different qualified solar installers for you to choose from. You don't have to choose all 3. You can pick one of the 3. You can pick 2. You can pick 3. But you can get quotes from those folks, see what they're offering, and then make the best decision for yourself. Ultimately, if you do what we call a behind-the-meter solar array, a solar array that feeds electricity directly into your home, that is going to be the best overall investment for you. It might still certainly involve some upfront costs, but that is going to be long-term the best economic situation for you. Now, in terms of do-it-yourself, that question gets a little tricky. I'm sure some folks can do some of these projects on their own, but they are tricky. You know, you're going to need to have a licensed electrician come in, make sure everything is connected properly. And even if you know one of those folks, the utility is still going to have to come in and do their work too. You're going to have to get permits from your city or your local municipality as well. So it is possible to do these projects DIY, but I just want to caution that it's not as simple as maybe some other home remodeling projects.
And so I heard you say that you have some qualified installers, and that would seem to strike a good chord with me. Are there a number of good qualified people out there, and can people go to your site and take a look and see, you know, who's there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the group buy that I run, like I said, is called Madison. So you can go to MadisonSolar.com, Madison Solar. And we provide 3 qualified contractors. There certainly are many more of them out there, Larry. We actually do a process each spring of vetting those contractors. And unfortunately, we have to pick and choose. But right now, the 3 contractors that we're using for this program are all Madison-based as well. So that also provides, you know, kind of an extra layer of good feelings for folks knowing that their contractors are local. But, you know, there are qualified solar contractors across the state, across the region, and across the country. So I would just encourage folks to, you know, do their homework, check things like the Better Business Bureau, check things like Angie's List, make sure that these folks have done installations before, make sure they understand the local permitting rules, and make sure that they're getting a good price for their system.
I'm wondering, is there a professional association yet? This is relatively, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a relatively new business, if you think about it. Is there a professional association?
Yeah, there's a certification, excuse me, called NABCEP, and the name for that is kind of escaping my memory right now. I think it's called the North American Board of Certified Energy Professionals, or excuse me, practitioners. And so there is that is a certification you can get to install solar. So if you see that your solar installers are NABCEP certified, that's great. But honestly, we have some solar installers out there that don't have that certification and still do a great job, still understand, you know, like I said, all the local permitting, still understand the engineering of the projects as well. But NABCEP, N-A-B-C-E-P, that is kind of the first thing that I would look for. It's the main solar installer certification that you want to look for.
N-A-B-C-E-P, correct?
Correct.
All right. All right, there we go. Sam Dodaisky, our guest today, Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin, talking with him about solar energy. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we talk solar with our guest, Sam Dodaisky of Renew Wisconsin. Lots of callers online, some great emails as well. Let's take a call. Frankie in Fort Atkinson, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to let you know that we have a solar group buy program going on in Jefferson and Waukesha counties. It's a joint program, and ours is run through Midwest Renewable Energy Association, and we have that company that we're working with is All Energy Solar. We did a program in Jefferson County a couple of years ago and worked with another company, Full Spectrum, then, and so this is our second go-round at doing a solar group buy program, and it's Waukesha County's first go-around doing a solar buy program, too. And I think that it's a great way to help people feel comfortable accessing solar power for their homes, and because I think that vetting the companies that we work with is really important, and having it be a local operation helps people get through that comfort level.
Yeah, I would think so. Frankie, thanks a lot for calling and talking about it. Sounds like you've got a good program there. Maybe we need to explain more about what is a solar group buy first, and then you can address Frankie's comments as well.
Suggest that Frankie, great job with your group buy. And there are these group buys located all over Wisconsin. If you don't know if your area has one, you know, you can certainly reach out to me or maybe someone else, you know, local elected official or something like that, see if they maybe know. But they're going on all over the state. And group buys are really great for a couple of reasons. You know, by collecting a bunch of homeowners together, we're able to bring down the price a little bit through bulk purchasing and other, you know, kind of economies of scale like that. As Frankie pointed out, we also, group buys also do a good job of collecting and vetting qualified solar installers too. So you know the folks that design and install your systems, you're going to do a great job. And finally, providing education. You know, solar is pretty new for a lot of us. There are, you know, classes out there for folks doing their first home buy, but there aren't really classes out there for buying solar. And group buys provide that element of education too. So we, in my group buy, I can't speak for all of them, but I've seen other group buys as well. You know, we talk about just how solar works. We talk about how it can help you economically. And then we kind of talk about step by step what the process is going to look like so folks understand what they're getting into and kind of just understand what's to be expected of them and what they can expect from their systems.
So it's not something that's installed on each individual home, or how does the group buy it? How does it work that way? Someone's wanting to know.
Yeah, so they are installed on individual homes, but essentially what we're doing is I'm going out and talking to my neighbor. My neighbor is going out and talking to their neighbor. And then collectively, we all decide, okay, I want to put a solar array on my home. Heather wants to put a solar array on her home. Jim wants to put a solar array on his home. And then we all talk to the contractors and we say, hey, all three of us are going to do this. Can you give us a price break? Are you a qualified installer? Can you talk a little bit more about the process? And that's how those group buys tend to work. So we collect people individually, but as a group, we're able to, you know, like I said, bring those costs down, make sure we get a good installer, and bring in that element of education as well.
And it sounds like certainly Frankie and Ford Atkinson, they've been quite successful from the sound of it. But she also sounds like she's been pretty, they've been careful vetting and going through the steps.
Yeah, and that's a big process too, is selecting those contractors, making sure they're familiar with all the local permitting and the local statutes and things like that. It does take a little bit of work, but if you do it sort of, like I said, as a group or as a community, the benefits for everyone really outweigh all that extra work and all that extra upfront efforts that you have to go through.
Kenneth in Janesville called to ask if there are still programs for nonprofits to get solar. If so, when do they expire?
Yeah, so the big problem that nonprofits have with going solar is they cannot take advantage of the federal ITC, the Federal Investment Tax Credit. So because of that, solar arrays are a little bit more expensive for nonprofits. So that's where our solar, that's where Renew Wisconsin's Solar for Good program comes in. We help out, like I said, with grants and with materials themselves that kind of decrease that upfront cost. And so the tax credits are not there, but there are grant programs like ours. The Wisconsin Office of Energy Innovation, they do some grants as well. There's also solar rebates and incentives from the statewide Focus on Energy program as well. So there are ways that nonprofits can make this work, but it admittedly is a little bit harder for them. There are a few more hoops that they have to jump through, especially on the economic side, in order to make these installations possible. But again, that's why we want to provide that help, because the economic advantages for a nonprofit to go solar and reduce their electricity bills really can help free up some of their budget and some of their revenue to be able to put into other programs and other services that those nonprofits provide.
Mike in Algoma, we'll go to you now. Mike, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I got a couple of things. First of all, I've been involved with the Wisconsin Public Service program where I pay a couple dollars a month. That supposedly it offsets the kilowatts that I actually consume. But secondly, I'd love to put it on my house. The house is not oriented north, south, east, west, though. So that I'm wondering, is it practical to put panels that don't face directly south? I could do it one side of the house would get it in the morning, another part of the house would get it in the afternoon. And then there's a third one, but I'll think of that one. Go ahead.
Yeah. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah. Another great thing with these efficiency upgrades in the panels means that they don't have to face directly south. That certainly used to be the case, and we're talking only, 4 or 5 years ago. Now, because of the efficiency of the panels and because of some policies called net metering, which essentially allows you to kind of virtually bank that electricity that you overproduce and allows you to bring that electricity in later on. Because of those two items, panels absolutely now can face east or west or south. North is the one direction here in Wisconsin and honestly in the Northern Hemisphere that we don't want them to face. Honestly, though, the bigger physical barrier right now to installing solar on your home is trees and shading. I am in this situation right now. Unfortunately, my home faces southwest. I have three beautiful silver maple trees sitting in front of my home that shade it very nicely, but also make it nearly impossible to do solar. So that's actually the bigger issue. And for some folks, not usually folks that live in the city or even the suburbs, but if you live in a rural area, you might actually be able to do solar on the ground. It's called a ground-mounted array. Those installations can cost a little bit more, not too much more. But if it's the only place you can put them, or if it's the place you prefer they go, those installations can definitely work out as well.
Mike also wondered if it makes sense to use the energy to heat water. So just to have a setup that would heat water.
Yeah, there used to be solar hot water systems. Some people still have them. They still work, certainly, in a lot of instances. Most folks now, though, I believe the economics work out better if you do a solar photovoltaic or solar PV array. That's the kind of solar we've been talking about here for the most part, and switch to an electric water heater, because you can take that electricity that you produce from your solar PV and not only use it to heat your water, but you can also use it to charge your phone or run your computer or watch TV or whatever else you might be wanting to do. So solar hot water is kind of going away. There are still a few of those. There are certainly some of those installations still out there, but very few new ones going in.
Another Mike, this one in Madison has a question, I believe. Mike, hello.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Regarding solar on the roof, and especially folks that are do-it-yourselfers, can you talk a little bit about the zoning codes in regard to structural, in regard to the added snow load that could be caused by having these panels up on the roof, and then also, having been a part of a few roof tear-offs, asphalt can have water penetration, and especially with all of these anchors that get mounted to support the panels, what about the water penetration and possible damage to roofs caused by the installations?
Yeah, good questions as well. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, those are some great questions. So in terms of the codes, actually each city and each municipality is going to be a little different in kind of how you go through that permitting and approval process. So I would just encourage you to reach out to your city. Mike, you said you live in Madison. I would just encourage you to reach out to the city of Madison, find out what kind of engineering review you're going to have to go through in order to get panels on the roof. You know, the panels are kind of heavy, but they're very evenly distributed. I have seen some instances in very old houses, we're talking 100-year-old houses or more, where there does have to be some structural reinforcements that happen to your roof in order to put those solar panels on top of your house. For the most part, though, if you don't have a very old house, it should be fine. But definitely, you know, check with your local jurisdiction on what the codes are. And then in terms of leakage, the solar contractors that I work with, especially through our Madison group buy, they've told me that they have literally never had a complaint or an issue with leakage and with roof penetrations. Now, that doesn't mean that it's never happened across the industry, certainly, but they do a great job of, I don't know the exact process, but there are some rubber gaskets involved. It is a very, very tight system. And if you have a steel roof, it's actually even easier. The solar panels will actually clamp on to the seam of a standing seam metal roof. And you don't even have to make a penetration there. So if you have a standing seam metal roof, that's even better. But even if you have, you know, a typical shingle roof, the instances of leakage are very rare if ever. I've actually heard more issues going on with squirrels chewing through the lines and getting at the solar panels and the electrical work that way. So, but leakage is of rare concern.
Kent in Reedtown wonders about ease of cleaning. He has some roof-mounted panels, wishes he had them ground-mounted because of the ease of cleaning.
Yeah, you know, those panels, they sit out in the elements. They're going to, you know, they're going to get dirt on them. In the winter, they're going to get snow on them, and that will come into play with your production, certainly. For the most part, though, they do a good job. The panels do of essentially cleaning themselves. You know, when we get a rain, that'll wash off any dirt or dust or debris that's been on them. In the wintertime, I know a lot of folks are concerned about snow and having snow falling on them. Because these panels are typically black or a dark blue color, and because they are installed at an angle, most of the time that snow is going to melt and slide off the panels on its own. Now, if we did a really big snowfall followed by a really harsh cold snap, that snow will certainly stick to your panels for a few days or maybe even a week, and you aren't going to get as much electricity out of your system. That is simply the fact. But that being said, you know, typically that snow, like I said, eventually will melt and slide off, and you'll start producing electricity again.
Gary in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I was interested in the progress of
we're losing Gary. He has a question about solar roofing tiles. And what's the situation with solar roofing tiles? Sorry, we lost Gary there.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions about the solar tiles. Quite frankly, I don't think that they have kind of passed the sniff test at this point. I might be wrong on that. But what I do know is right now, the typical solar panels that all of the contractors I work with that are installing do a great job. They produce all of the electricity that you need, or in theory, they should produce all the electricity that you need. So there's really not much of a need for those tiles. If you're more concerned with aesthetics, that's certainly something you can look into. But I think for the most part, for most of us, if we're interested in doing solar and offsetting our electrical usage, the panels and the equipment that's available to us right now does more than a good enough job.
Scott in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Scott.
Morning. I'm curious. I see the Generac ad where they show the lithium ion storage battery in case you have a power outage. What does having a lithium ion battery in your house do to your insurance?
Does that have an effect on your insurance costs?
That is a good question, and one, to be honest, I am not completely sure of. I do know we always tell people if they're doing a solar array or even a solar array with a battery backup to talk to your insurance adjuster. You know, let them know that this project is happening. You might want to insure your roof or your home for a little bit more money. So that's what I would just do. I would encourage folks to talk to whoever their insurance provider is. You know, let them know what's in your home, what the cost of the system was, things like that. And then they can, you know, provide that information for you. Some I've heard, you know, don't change your monthly bill at all. Some I've heard it goes up by a few dollars, but it changes so much, and it changes depending on, you know, what kind of system you put in and who your insurance provider is. So I would just encourage folks to talk to their providers and find out what they recommend.
Thank you, Scott. Susie in New Berlin, your turn now. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just got a letter in the mail saying, and it refers to We Energies in a couple of places, but it's not actually from them, asking or saying that my house qualifies for a free solar installation program. and saying that it won't cost me anything. No upfront costs, no hidden fees, no installation charges. Secure your 50% rate reduction today. And it's like, to determine your eligibility, you must call a local Modern Mill Solar representative today. So it looks like either a scam or, you know, somebody's worded this very strangely. Have you heard anything about a program going around?
We actually had someone call earlier about something kind of similar, Sam, but go ahead and comment.
Yeah, like I said before, you know, whenever I see the word free, my spidey senses start to tingle, because nothing is free these days. And so, again, I encourage you, you know, if you're interested, certainly call, but be very cautious whenever you see these deals that look like they're too good to be true. You know, a utility, a big company, is not going to bother with putting solar on individual houses to sort of buff up the entire grid, right? Because these are smaller installations. It's going to help you out a lot, certainly. But that's why it's really important for you to go and talk to qualified contractors. You know, and it can start with something as simple as a Google search. But call around, call several different people, get many, many quotes. Don't take the first offer that comes across, because if you get someone that, you know, wants you to sign a contract right away that day or do something else, there's probably a reason for it. So I just really want to encourage folks to take their time on this process, do their homework. And if you have any questions, talk to someone you trust, either talk to the utility itself, or you can certainly email us as well at Renew Wisconsin. You can also talk to the folks at DATCAP as well, the Consumer Protection Agency in Wisconsin. They have some important information as well on their websites regarding solar contractors and maybe some of these more questionable, you know, mailers and communications that are going around to homeowners around the state.
Yeah. Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, or DATCAP, as it's called. Susie, thank you. Kel in Sugar Camp, your turn. Hi, Kel. Kel, are you there? Kel was wondering if power companies have better technologies than we as homeowners can get. That's what I'm reading here.
So, utility scale installations are going to have a few more bells and whistles than a home solar array will. And that is a fact. Their panels are typically going to be a little bit bigger, not only in their footprint, their size, but also in their electricity and their wattage as well. Typically, utility scale installations will also be put on trackers. So there are these stands that actually follow the sun throughout the day. So, you know, they'll start out with the panels in the east, they'll kind of swing around to the south, and then eventually over to the west in the afternoon to really, really maximize their efficiency throughout the day. For a homeowner, you're not going to have that. It's going to cost too much money. Again, with net metering policies and other things in place, it's actually better for you to just do a very simple array, flush mounted to your roof, and that should be able to, like I said, offset all of the electricity that you need. So there are some more, like I said, there are some more bells and whistles with utility type installations for solar. But like I said before, what's in place now for homeowners is more than enough for what 99% of us out there need.
Sam Donaisky, our guest today, he's the Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin. And we have some open lines for you right now. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share relating to solar, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or feel free to email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network, taking a look at solar energy on the program today with Sam Donaisky, Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin. Questions for him, give a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Terry and Roberts emailed to ask how long today's solar panels last and are they easy to recycle? Are they made of materials that create a negative impact regarding their manufacturing and so forth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So today's solar panels, for the most part, will last you at least 25 years. Most of the ones we have a 25-year warranty. Just like a car, they typically go a lot longer than that, at least if it's anyone that I know that we certainly take them a lot longer. So they're going to last, 25, 30 years, maybe even more. The only maybe problem or drawback that we're seeing right now, at least, is the technology is just moving forward ahead so quickly that it's almost better for us to put these newer panels on. So I don't know what it's going to look like, 10 years down the road. But that kind of excellently morphs into the other question, and that's about recycling. So solar panels, for the most part, are made of two materials, silicon, and aluminum. So not a lot to them, really. And I certainly have been talking with some companies recently that do electronics and solar panel recycling. There's not a lot of them out there right now, to be perfectly honest, but we're definitely seeing this conversation kicking up more, and we're seeing companies that recycle electronics moving into this arena. And we're already seeing, like I said, there's a company in California that will recycle the entire panel. You can also refurbish the panels as well, so those panels can be used to go onto other rooftops, other buildings that maybe, and maybe at a discounted price too. So those options are out there. They're scarce at the moment, but they are out there and they are only growing as we continue to install more and more panels.
Let's go to Chris in Sirona next. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm just calling. We live between Spooner and Rice Lake, and right now we're very happy. Both community utilities have put up huge solar arrays, and they just are starting to work. That's good news. We have a solar array on a pole. It's 15 panels. We adjust the angle, several times a year, and it's just kind of fun for us to watch. And we also have a Chevy Bolt electric car, and so we plug that into the garage in our. It all works well for us, and we wish we had a bigger display. We had two bids at the beginning, but we opted for one on the pole instead of the ground mount. We didn't have a roof that would be suitable. So we're just very happy with it, and we just putt along in our electric car. So it's all possible.
Chris, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, and mounting it on a pole, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, this is what I would consider a ground mount, and what I think a lot of my associates would consider a ground mount as well. Basically, is it on a pole or is it on a roof? Right? If it's on a pole, the pole is on the ground, and that makes it a ground mount installation. But those installations can be great. Sometimes they are on poles that maybe are a little bit higher, just so they can get up above maybe any vegetation or anything else around them. That might potentially shade them. So that's why we typically put them on poles. But Chris, it's so great to hear that not only that you have solar and an electric vehicle, but also that you go out and move the angle of those panels, because that can make a big difference in a latitude like Wisconsin, especially in the northern part of the state. There's a lot more sun in the summer months here, like we have. In the winter time, when the sun is much lower in the horizon, it's much more important to tilt that panel to a higher degree, and so it can collect that electricity. A lot of people assume that in the winter panels shut down completely. That is not the case, actually. We just don't have as many sunlit hours during a day. Panels actually work a lot better in the winter. They're more efficient. They work better in cold temperatures. I think ideally most panels work best between like 30 and 40 degrees. And also in the wintertime, our atmosphere is a little bit thinner. It's colder. So there's just not as much of that, you know, particulate matter and other things like that. So the panels actually work more efficiently in the wintertime. So it's just really great to see, you know, these installations of various size and locations across the state. So it's just really great to hear.
Yes, it is indeed. Dan in Stevens Point, your turn.
Hey, guys. Hi, Dan. Hey, thanks. Yeah, I have solar panels on our house. We got them two years ago through a group by here near Custer, Wisconsin. So shout out to the MREA out of Custer, Wisconsin. I have a question, though. We live in the country, and our utility, unfortunately, doesn't have net metering. So that's a bummer for us. And I was just curious if you knew statewide, are there trends towards, like, we have a smaller electric co-op type of utility. Are people shifting towards using net metering more, or is there anything I can do to sort of encourage our utility to get on board with that?
Yeah, so net metering policies, this is the tricky part, is they vary. Every utility has its own policy, whether it's an investor-owned utility, whether it's a municipal utility or a co-op. They all have different rules on this. Some are more favorable, and some, unfortunately, you know, in Dan's situation, are not. So, you know, there are various ways of going about, you know, talking to your utility, certainly, to hopefully get those net metering policies changed. But that's something to certainly keep in mind too, if you're thinking about doing a home solar array, you want to talk and the solar installers across the state are great at this. They know the net metering policies of each utility, and they can kind of tell you, you know, what type of system is best for you to do, or maybe even if it's not a good idea for you to do. So it's really important for you to talk to a qualified contractor. Dan, I'm glad you have gone solar. I'm sorry that policy is not working out for you as well. I think we're hoping to get some of these net metering policies changed here in the next year or so. But we're just keeping our fingers crossed at this point. And also a shout out, I have my MREA mug right here. Obviously none of you can see it, but Larry can see it here. So another shout out to the Midwest Renewable Energy Association.
Absolutely. Dan, thank you. Warren in Black Earth, your turn. Hi, Warren.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this show. I'm wondering what the advancements are, both in inverters and in storage technology and costs that are taking place now, and also especially as it relates to communicating with utilities. I'm wondering if they're starting to see home solar storage as an opportunity for them rather than a threat.
Okay, what do you think, Sam?
Yeah, there is definitely, you know, we've talked a lot about the technological changes in panels, but, you know, Warren hit the nail on the head here. There's definitely been some big changes in inverters and storage. Right now, we're seeing a lot more micro inverters. So those are inverters attached to or really close to each individual panel. And that's great because if one panel kind of is shutting down, you can identify it real easily. You can go out and do any maintenance that might be needed or required, but the other ones can still work just fine. So that's a big trend, at least that I'm seeing, is we're going away from kind of the big inverter that's, you know, maybe located in your basement next to your breaker box and more towards these micro inverters and more towards some other technologies as well to kind of help those individual panels work. Storage, however, is maybe the area where we're seeing some of the biggest changes and the biggest gains. When I first started at Renew just 3 years ago, battery storage and battery backup was almost unheard of, at least in Wisconsin. Now, the solar installers that I talk to say they are having, you know, genuine conversations with homeowners about battery storage and battery backup, probably 75% of the time, 50 to 75% of the time, depending on which installer I'm talking with. So that is huge. And now, thankfully, you know, before it was kind of an all or nothing system. You could either be connected to the grid, but without any battery backup, or you'd have to be completely removed from the grid and have to have a lot of battery backup and have to change your lifestyle and things like that. But now there are battery components that can actually keep you to the grid. And when the grid goes down, you can sort of island yourself and do your own generation there. These battery systems still, however, cost a lot of money. So I definitely, you know, caution you to do that. But the good news is those prices are only going to continue to come down as the technology improves and as we implement more of those batteries.
Thank you very much for calling, Warren. Appreciate your call. Sam Donaisky, our guest today, Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin, and he's going to be staying with us right up until 12:30 today. Lots of good emails I see here. We got William in Windsor with a question as well. You can join us, open lines at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guest, Sam Donaisky. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about home solar energy today with Sam Donaisky, Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin. So questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Sam, we have William online from Windsor. Let's go there. William, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I worked in the industry for a while. I trained in solar, and we found ourselves down in Davenport, Iowa, unable to start solar companies because the local utilities made it hard, and we tried to go through the state commissioning process, but they got the not in my backyard. My question relates to Tesla. I know they do a solar installation where they can put batteries and in Wi-Fi or networked control system that allows you to sell back electricity. Do you know whether they're going to be working with Tesla anytime in the future to get a distributed system that allows sell back to Tesla, that allows you to look on your phone to see what your service is or look on your laptop to see what your service is doing? It just seems like a more intensive way of being aware of what you're doing as a solar producer. And I'll take the call offline.
All right, William, thank you. Sam, are you familiar with this?
So, yeah, most solar installers now provide some sort of monitoring or consumption services. And my parents actually have one of this. You can check and see how much solar you're producing throughout the day. There's also different apps and different programs you can check to see how much you are consuming, and some will actually do both as well. My father, for instance, purchased an iPhone just so he could see his solar array and how much he was producing. And my father has only ever owned two cell phones his entire life. And so he went from a flip phone a few years ago to an iPhone just so he can monitor this. So yeah, most solar contractors will offer this service. Sometimes it's a little, it's an add-on. Sometimes it's actually rolled into the cost, but that is definitely a service that is available now for not even, you don't even need solar to be able to figure out these services. You can do them even without.
John in Appleton emailed to ask, what is the average or typical payback in years for a home solar system?
A very good question. Typically, we tell people that a home solar array will pay off itself in about 10 years. Now, that number can fluctuate quite a bit, as you can probably imagine. Everything from how shaded your home is, what utility you're on, to what kind of weather patterns we get in a year, honestly. Some folks can bring that return on investment time down to as little as 7 years if you're on a time of use rate. If you're really savvy about how and when you use your electricity, you can bring that down. Some folks might take 12 or even 15 years to pay for them, and some even more. It kind of depends on what you're looking for. Some people install solar strictly for the economic benefits. Others do it more for the environmental benefits. Whichever way you choose is fine with us. But typically, a residential solar array will take about 10 years to pay off.
Let's take another call. George in Ashland, it's your turn. Hi, George.
Hi. Howdy. You commented a few minutes ago on the older technology of solar heating for hot water. I wanted to point out that if you're on photovoltaic panels, if you use a more modern technology heat pump hot water heater, it'll stretch your electricity a lot further. It also goes for heat pumps for heating and cooling your home, because the heat pump technology is so vastly improved that it helps your photovoltaic electricity go a lot longer. That's all I had to comment.
Yeah, George, thanks. Sam, that's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a great way, like I said, for you to offset, you know, it's this additionality component that solar can provide. Not only can it offset your electricity, not only can it offset your fuel if you have an electric vehicle, but if you install an air source heat pump or a ground source, I guess it would be a different system if it's a ground source heat pump. But if you install an air source heat pump, that can also help with heating and cooling as well. So again, these additionalities that we're seeing now coming on to the market are really, really impressive. And the fact that, you know, you can couple these systems, you know, like I said, together with solar, with EVs, is really great. And it really just shows we're just at the tip of the iceberg here for where this technology is going.
Rod in Conover, your turn. Hi, Rod.
Good afternoon. I was just going to mention that I have a cabin in a very rustic area. And 2 years ago, I purchased online, I think it was with Amazon, but there's other providers, a small photoelectric system that has a battery storage capacity, and it will give me six different LED lights that light up the entire cabin. The battery on a full charge will last anywhere from 6 to 8 hours of usage, and it's a lot cheaper to run that than it would be for me to, you know, set up a whole generator system. It's just easy. I can go and flip the switch and it's clean. I also bought another one just to put in a storage building nearby. They work very well. And when I was researching that, I read that quite a few people during the hurricanes down in the Caribbean islands were buying those when their electricity was out to use for, you know, temporary residential lighting until they could get their domestic electricity back up. So it works real well and it's inexpensive.
Rod, thanks a lot. Sam, you're familiar with this.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many different technologies and equipment out there for folks to kind of help with these types of situations. Too many to really go into just on this show. But yeah, it's a matter of different things for different people. And, you know, a solar array, admittedly, you know, might not work for Rod in his situation, or it might be, you know, more than he needs. So that's why it's really good for us to incorporate these other types of technologies and equipment into the correct situation.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rod. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. The open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Richard in Eau Claire. Hi, Richard.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I got a company out of Colorado that contacted me that they would like to rent my 10 acres to put solar panels in. Now, I can't give you the exact name because I'm driving down the road in the truck right now, but I was just curious if he has heard anything like that around.
Interesting. That hasn't come up before in the show. Sam, are you familiar with this?
So a lot of the utility scale solar installations are just what Richard here has talked about. That you do need a lot of land for utility size installations. Typically, a solar developer will come along and offer to lease someone's land. They're not buying the land. The utility is not doing this. It's actually a private developer. And the offers for that, as you can probably guess, range a lot depending on where you are and how much land you're using and things like, or how much land you have to provide to lease to solar panels and things like that. But yeah, that's absolutely what is happening here. I certainly encourage folks, if you are, again, similar kind of steps to if someone approaches you about home solar, you know, do some research on the company, make sure that they are legitimate, maybe even confer with a lawyer if it gets to that stage of the process. But yes, this is becoming more common because you do need wider portions of land. The good news, however, you know, farmers have had a real tough time in recent years. And by leasing their land for solar, this is a way that they can keep that land in the family. They can provide for themselves another source of income. So I really think that these types of installations are providing a great good. They're also completely different, separate from that. They're adding a lot of renewable energy to the grid as well. So I think personally, it's a win-win situation for everyone. But this is, the process Richard talked about is very similar to some of the other ones that I have seen so far.
I wonder if in Richard's case, I'd be tempted to look around in my local area just to see if there were other individuals that are locally doing this. Then you'd have somebody close to home. But maybe the Colorado company would work out just fine. Richard, thanks so much. Colleen in Cumberland emailed to ask if you could touch on solar generators a bit more. Are they feasible, and is there enough sunlight to justify their use in northwestern Wisconsin, and what's the price?
So the price is going to vary a little bit, not just geographically, but more so based on the system that you need. So typically, when we talk about residential solar, I tell people that the average size solar array in Wisconsin is about 5 kilowatts, which is approximately, I think, 12 to 15 panels. However, this is sort of like going into the Levi's store and asking the clerk, what is the average size pair of jeans? Because I need to buy a pair of jeans. That might not help you out at all. So every solar array needs to be sized specifically to the home or to the facility. So typically a 5 kilowatt array, again, which is just the average, is going to cost around $15,000 with with federal investment tax credits, with money from Focus on Energy and rebates and other places. We can typically bring that price down to about $10,000. So that's about the average cost for a solar installation in Wisconsin. Again, each one is going to be different. And I also want to point out too that, you know, we've talked about the price and how much it has declined in the last 10 years. Clearly, as I just pointed out, it is still not free. But I like to liken this to other home remodeling projects. You know, if you're replacing windows or a roof or siding or things like that, those projects also cost a lot of money. And we don't see the kind of return on investment time in those projects that we do for solar. But I completely realize that, you know, it's going to be dependent on your situation. But that is sort of a ballpark figure that I can give folks for the cost of these residential arrays.
You mentioned roofs, and Pete in Reedsburg emailed to ask that if his house needs a new roof, is there an advantage to doing a solar installation at the same time, or are they separate jobs regardless of the timing of the new roof?
Well, they are completely separate, but if you are thinking about solar, you definitely want to take a look at the age and the physical state of your roof. The reason for that is, you know, as we talked about earlier, these solar arrays can last 20 or 30 years. That lifetime is about the same lifetime as a typical, you know, a standard shingled roof. So what you don't want to do is go into a solar project with a 20-year-old roof, put the solar panels down, have to, at some point in the near future, have someone come and remove those panels, disconnect the system, do the roofing work and then have the panels come back and reinstalled. That's going to really eat into your return on investment time. So we definitely urge folks to take a look at their roof. If it's not, you know, up to par, do the roof work first and then do the solar after that. You know, the folks who do the roofing work are completely different from the folks who do the solar work. But if you do them, if you do the roof right away and you do the solar right away, you're going to have a roof that's going to be good for a long time. We like to tell people, install solar as soon as the glue dries on your shingles. That'll maximize your return on investment.
And Deb had a similar question because they're putting on a new roof, but she wonders about, is there a roofing material that might be better for solar than another? Are there things to consider in getting the new roof and solar in that way? So
for
you mentioned
sure.
the
like
metal.
Go ahead. Yeah, like I said, the standing seam metal roof is the best. Again, best typically comes with a higher price tag too, as you can probably imagine. But a standing seam metal roof, strictly talking about solar, is ideal because it can just clamp on. You don't need to make any penetrations in the roof. A steel roof is also just going to last a lot longer than a typical shingle roof. So you don't have to worry, even in the worst case scenario, you know, about having to do that thing where I said you have to disconnect and remove the panels and then redo the roof work as well. A standing seam metal roof is the best. Some of these odd roof types are not as great. I think it's the metal shingles. They're not great. I don't know roof types, but I know that kind of the clay roofs that you see in the Southwest are not ideal as well. But for the most part, the installers can work around the majority of roof types.
Mark in Kimberly, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Well, I wonder for apartment dwellers, if I was to have a van with a flat roof, if I could put solar panels on there, have a hydraulic lift maybe to get it an angle right, and maybe wings or something so it fold out like a butterfly. Is the weight just going to kill that idea? Is there anything, anybody tried that?
I think weight might be an issue, Sim.
Yeah, sorry. I have not heard of any folks trying that. I like to tell people anything's possible. It's just a matter of cost and effectiveness, right? But you touch on a really important issue here that I'd like to bring up, and that is apartment dwellers. If you live in an apartment, you know, you don't own your rooftop. It makes it much more difficult to install solar. So Renew is a policy organization. And this is something that has definitely bothered us for a long time. We're going to try to hopefully, you know, change some of the policies maybe that can make these situations more advantageous for apartment dwellers. Right now, if you see solar on top of an apartment building, it's typically only going to power the common areas. And a lot of times that roof space is not maximized to be able to provide power for the tenants as well. So that's definitely something that we'd like to see happen because we don't want to leave apartment dwellers behind as we incorporate more solar into our system.
Yeah, makes sense. Bob and Mellon, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Well, good morning. I have a little different direction with solar. I built a new house up in northern Wisconsin in 2016. It has what's called solar mass storage heat, 2 feet of sand under the entire structure with tubing and big collectors that circulate a glycol fluid through the sand bed. So when it's 10 below, 15 below, as long as the sun can see the collectors, there's between 110 and 120 degrees coming off the roof going into the sand bed. It's a wonderful system. The only drawback is that I do get a fair amount of snow built up. And all the research I have tried to find another alternative, my only alternative is a ladder and a snow rake to clean those panels. And they are probably 30 feet up off the ground or more. At 72, I'm thinking, you know, there should be probably a better arrangement at some point. But I have searched and searched and searched for some sort of technology that could just melt the snow off. And what happens, being collectors, if it snows and those are warm, the snow melts, and then when it's dark, it freezes, and so it's not going to just slide off. I have been told that and watched, and it will take days and days and days and days, and there is no heat being generated.
Well, you're in Mellon too, Bob. I'm wondering, Sam, is there? I mean, Bob's in Mellon. That's pretty far north, for sure. Is there another answer for him?
That is a million-dollar question that Bob has, mostly because the panels are so high up. So I was talking a little bit before about my parents' solar array. My parents actually live outside of Duluth, Minnesota, which is even further north. And, you know, they have some similar problems, too, as you can probably guess, with snow, and especially snow followed by cold weather as well. There's not a lot of options. I think, unfortunately, you just have to, like I said, let those panels melt the snow and do their thing. And eventually, you know, your power will come back online. But it is frustrating. So I do, you know, sympathize with Bob for that, because it's not a super straightforward situation.
And there's not a material that you can spray on the panels that will be, you know, slippery or whatever to sort of help that process?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm not an engineer, but I'm sure someone out there has a trick that they can share. But as far as I know, you know, we don't like to tell people to manipulate the panels too much, because you don't want to avoid the warranty. And like I said, they do such a good job on their own, for the most part, of shedding snow, that it's not something we want to kind of take the risk to do.
What are some other good here? We got about 30 seconds left. What are some other good resources for people looking for more information about solar energy? Probably your website would be one.
Yeah, we actually have a great amount of resources. So if you go to renewwisconsin.org, we actually, on the top right side of the banner, have a little tab that says resources. There's resources for all sorts of things. They're not just solar, but we have info on biogas, on electric vehicles, hydropower, you name it. So definitely go to renewwisconsin.org.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Sam. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. Really appreciate your time today. Sam Danieski is the Distributed Resources Director for Renew Wisconsin. He'll be back and we'll do this again. Just looking ahead, tomorrow on Garden Talk, horticulturist Dave Wanniger will be back to help you choose and care for woody ornamentals. That's Friday at 11 and Saturday morning at 6 a.m. on the Ideas Network. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.